Please excuse us. We're having technical difficulties here.
Just play something.
I grew up out in the country, spreading my wings wild and free, learning about life from Mother Nature, doing what comes naturally. Two little boys, 8 years old, cousins on my daddy's side. Me and Bobby Wayne, friends from birth, playing out in the woods. Bobby Wayne looks at me right in the eye, smiles a crooked smile and says, wanna do what our mamas and daddies do. Somehow I knew just what he meant, 'cause we were out in the country, spreading our wings wild and free, learning about life from Mother Nature, doing what comes naturally. Later on, 16 by now, slowly becoming men. Me and Bobby Wayne hunting in the woods, he looks at me and grins. He walks right over, grabs me by the arm, touches my face and says, come over here, let's do what grown men do. I've been doing it ever since, 'cause we were out in the country, spreading our wings wild.
Kiss me, smile. And through his steel blue eyes, I can see for miles. He picks big band music and the Rolling Stones. But we listen to country when we're all alone. 'Cause it makes me crazy, it drives me
touch the ground, blasting through the wind and a wall of sand.
evening and good evening and welcome to Outbeat Music. I'm Michaela Kennan here in Studio A with Mary Moore Campagna on the engineering boards. And tonight we are listening to Pure Country, LGBT style, as we do every second Sunday of the month. That was Sheely Wright bringing us in on that first tune. And I do apologize for those little gremlins that seem to want to get into the system. As we go through the show tonight, it's all about a little honky-tonk, maybe a little torch and twang, a few boot-scootin' beats with a little bit of country rock thrown in, and also with us, very special guest, riding the airwaves all the way from the great state of New York, singer-songwriter Justin Utley. We will be talking with him in just a little while. First, let's go to Greg Moralia and the Outbeat News.
Say, tell it like it is.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, March 11th, 2012. The stars came out last Sunday for the West Coast premiere reading of Oscar-winning screenwriter Dustin Lance Black's play 8, based on the Prop 8 trial. The likes of George Clooney, Jamie Lee Curtis, Brad Pitt, Kevin Bacon, Jane Lynch, Martin Sheen, and Matt Bomer reenacted the courtroom and personal drama of this historic legal battle to have California's gay marriage ban, Proposition 8, overturned. And they helped raise more than $2 million for this ongoing cause.
I believe, Your Honor, that there is a political tide turning. I think that people's eyes are being opened, finally. People are becoming more understanding and tolerant. The polls tell us that. There isn't any secret in that. But that does not justify a judge in a court to say, I really need the polls to be just a few inches higher. I need someone to go out and take the temperature of the American public before I can break this barrier and break down this discrimination. Because if they change it here in the next election in California, we still have Utah, we still have Missouri, and we still have Montana. This case is going to go to a court. Some judge is going to have to decide what we've asked you to decide. And you have to have a reason, Your Honor. And you have to have a reason that's real. Not speculation, not built on stereotypes, and not hypothetical. That's what the Supreme Court decision tells us. And I submit, at the end of the day, I don't know, and I don't have to put on any evidence. With all due respect to Mr. Cooper, does not cut it. It does not cut it when you're taking away the constitutional rights, basic human rights and human dignity from a large group of individuals. You cannot say after the fact, we are going to take away the constitutional right to liberty, privacy, association, and sexual intimacy that we already tell you you have. That is not acceptable. It is not acceptable under our Constitution, and Mr. Blankenhorn is absolutely right. The day we end that, we will be more American. Thank you.
The script of 8 was adapted from courtroom transcripts, firsthand accounts of drama in the courtroom, and interviews with the plaintiffs. You can watch the entire production on YouTube. Just search for 8 Play. And from the world of sports, a new public service announcement campaign funded by the family of the late Brendan Burke wants to make sports culture more welcoming to gay athletes. The New York Times reports on the campaign called You Can Play, which launched last week when the first message aired during NBC's broadcast of the Bruins-Rangers game.
If you can skate,
you can skate.
If you can shoot,
you can shoot.
If you can score,
you can score.
I'm Brian Burke, general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And I'm Patrick Burke, scout for the Philadelphia Flyers.
Before my brother Brennan passed away in 2010, he was the first person to fight for the rights of gay athletes in professional hockey. Since his accident, our family has fought hard to carry on his legacy and ensure that LGBT athletes around the world are afforded equal opportunity, judged only by their talent, character, and work ethic in their sport.
We're now joined by hockey players from around the world supporting my son Brennan's simple message.
If you can play,
you can play.
If you can play,
you can play.
If you can play,
you can play.
You Can Play has an advisory panel with representatives from other major sports leagues and women's sports. The project will also produce a playbook on how to create a welcoming and safe environment for LGBT athletes. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, March 12th at 7 p.m., the Spanish-speaking Parent Support Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And on Tuesday, March 13th at 6:30 p.m., the Transgender North Bay Group will meet at the Positive Images Center in Santa Rosa. And on Thursday, March 15th at 7 p.m., the Positive Images Youth Support Group will gather for its weekly meeting at 2230 Lomitas Avenue in Santa Rosa. And finally, on Friday, March 16th at 10:30 a.m., the Sonoma Valley Seniors Group will meet at the Vintage House Senior Center, 264 First Street East in Sonoma. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Music with Michaela Kennan.
Your hand is like a torch. Each time you touch me, that look in your eye pulls me apart. Don't open the door to heaven if I can't come in. Don't touch me if you don't.
On his chest they were two. He wanted to follow the heroes and do as the he-men do. Red, green, and many-colored hair tonics he rubbed on his chest day and night. When he looked in the mirror next morning, no new hairs grew in sight. He battled for Red Nellie's honor. He cleaned out a holdup's nest. He died with two six guns a-smokin', but only two hairs on his chest.
I'm Michaela Kennan, you're listening to Just a Little Bit of Pure Country. This as tonight's musical theme. In that last set, Wilma Burgess starting us out with Don't Touch Me. And yes, it was. You heard Burl Ives on that second piece with Lavender Cowboy. Finally finishing out with a bit of Odessa Yodel, that from Wiley and the Wild West and the soundtrack of Transamerica. There's been all kinds of discussion around out or even alleged closeted entertainers from the genre of country western music, right down to the almost oxymoron nature of the debate, can one be gay and a country western singer? And to what cost, actually, with respect to professional advancement, music sales, even concert bookings? We can look at Katie Lang and Shelly Wright just as two prominent examples. Incidentally, KD's first major album release in 1987 caused quite a stir in the country music industry. I think it was probably her androgynous appearance, the kind of somewhat campy, edgy approach to her traditional country tunes that really did have folks reeling. On the other hand, her vocal talents were really unsurpassed.
Baby, when the sun goes down, in the evening, baby, when the sun goes down, ain't it lonesome when your baby can't be found?
Well, now, if you love your baby and you treat him right, but he keeps on fussing at you every day and night,
he's gonna trifle on you.
Oh, come on in, Miss Kitty. They'll do it every time.
And when your baby starts to step in, Lord, you really lose your mind.
Now, if your baby's mean, take a tip from me. Woman, lock him up at home and throw away the key.
He's gonna trifle on you.
Trifle on you.
They'll do it every time.
And when your baby starts to step in, now you really lose your mind.
Yeah.
my darling? Baby, where you been so long? Dropping money in the jukebox and play another honky-tonk song.
Yeah. Ain't that right, Loretta?
Ah, yes. Honky-tonk Angels Medley. And that was KD with Dolly Parton, Kitty Wells, Brenda Lee, and Loretta Lynn, all first released in 1988. It wasn't too long after that, incidentally, that Katie Lang went over to the genre of adult contemporary pop. It was Sheely Wright that started us out, and who also came out just a couple of years ago. I don't know if you saw the recent Associated Press article, but she was almost immediately dropped from radio station play, booking engagements, and her latest album has reported to be selling only about a third of what her previous album did. Here's a quote from that article. She said, "Venues that booked her in the past told her agent and manager, 'We don't have a problem with her being gay, but we are afraid her fans will.'" So what's the deal? Well, I would suspect it's a conversation that's really much bigger than we can get into tonight. I would suffice it to say that institutionalized homophobia still exists, and the music industry, like any other business enterprise, is dependent upon a fan base that supports a brand name and an image. Those of us who know the stakes but choose to respect and honor our own paths are great models for all of us. Let's take a listen to this.
More than my eyes can, and he told me how to behave.
the best thing God ever made. And they think all that matters is the consequence after the grave. And they're so sadly mistaken and so lost in the river that breaks them. Will they ever have strength to withstand? Will they bury their heads in the sand?
Welcome back, and with that, I introduce you to this evening's guest on the phone, all the way from New York City. Justin, are you there?
I am.
Great, and are we coming through loud and clear?
You are coming through very clear and very loud.
Very good. I kind of blew out the speakers there, I think, on that one. Well, let me give you just a brief introduction. Justin was born and raised in Salt Lake City, Utah. He actually began his career as a Mormon contemporary singer-songwriter, and by about the late 1990s, he was touring through the western United States, performing mostly before the religious and faith-based audiences. In 2002, he was a featured performer at the Salt Lake City Winter Olympics, and it was during that time that he was also named Best Singer and Songwriter by the Salt Lake City Weekly, and also Best New Artist by the Indie Review Monthly. Around 5 years or so, Justin publicly broke his ties with the Mormon Church and became an activist for civil rights and LGBT equality. He also became an outspoken personality against the Church's use of conversion therapy, which he personally endured after about a 2-year stint as a full-time mission. In 2010, he released the song that we just heard, Stand for Something, which was also given then the Best Song of the Year award in the country folk category that by the LGBT Academy of Recording Arts. And the list goes on and on. Justin, welcome to Outbeat Music. It's a great to have you with us.
That was a pretty cool welcome. Thank you very, very much.
Well, you're most welcome. And I know it's late there on the East Coast, so I appreciate the fact that you're staying up late, so...
Well, people don't start going to bed in New York for another 4 hours, so we're fine.
Good, good. Well, it may seem like a bit of a stretch to go from, you know, talking about country music to breaking ranks with the Church, but, you know, not really. First of all, give us a little bit of a background on what inspired you to write Stand for Something.
Stand for Something came from, when I get emotional or passionate about something, I think that's when the best art is born, whether it's a Van Gogh or a Song of the Year. And I think, you know, once Proposition 8 happened, it really lit a fire inside of me that hadn't been lit for a little bit. I had, in Utah, there's basically no LGBT protection from discrimination on any level. And I had actually been told at one point, when I lived in Utah, by a loan office, I was a loan office manager, and the president of the credit union actually found out I was gay, and she told me that she wouldn't have hired me had she known. And that there was a woman that was more qualified than me, but since she had an HRC sticker on her truck, she didn't hire her. And after losing that job because of it, I felt just, you know, pretty degraded. Not worth very much, you know, on top of trying to deal with the religion and, myriad of other things. So piling that on top of it was just, you know, was really, really difficult. And not realizing I had any recourse at all, knowing that I didn't actually. I had called the ACLU and things after that had happened. So my experience in New York seemed like, you know, it was very liberating. But then when Proposition 8 happened, you know, I thought for sure it would be a non-issue. I felt the voting would be close, but I thought enough people would be getting out and doing the right thing. And obviously that wasn't the case. And mm-hmm. not that our civil rights of any group should be put up for a popular vote, but I was devastated. I was really upset because some of people I knew personally that knew me had voted for Proposition 8, which was to prohibit, you know, gay and lesbians from marrying.
Right.
And I was just devastated. And that relit that fire in me that nobody should have to be less than or classified different or use a different word for it for the same meaning type of thing. We live in a day and age where most of the rest of the civilized world has moved past this, and we still can't. And it directly affects me. And I, you know, that fire lit inside me again, and I felt like I needed to put something out there that wasn't a song about a breakup or, you know, falling into love or, you know, a myriad of other things I've written about.
Sure.
But I needed to write something that would help inspire and motivate people so this would never happen again, at least as, you know, something I could do to help, something I could do so that wouldn't happen again, at least doing my part,
mm-hmm.
trying to motivate people. Because if enough people would have basically gotten off their asses and voted and did the right thing, the Proposition 8 wouldn't even be an issue right now. So that's where that was born from.
I see. And, of course, we're still battling that back and forth here in California, but that's a
whole
other show. So
Yeah. I'm sorry that it's still a battle. I'm preaching to the choir, I'm sure. My heart goes out to you guys. It's heartbreaking to see that it's cost taxpayers so much money to battle out something that's is nobody else's business but the two people that want the relationship, you know.
Mhm. Mhm. Absolutely. So. Well, at what point did you realize your own sense of sexual orientation and that you were pretty much swimming upstream, if you will, against everything you had been taught and, you know, the culture around you and probably even the essence of your family dynamics? How old were you at that point?
I mean, I knew something was up when I was in, like, third or fourth grade, you know, like a crush on the coach or something like that, you know, gym class, whatever. Knowing that's what it was now.
Mm-hmm.
But I really figured it out when I was on my mission for the Mormon Church. I did 2 years. Most people got to go to exotic locations, and I got to go to Arizona. not that that's not exotic, I have to say. I had some exotic moments. But as a side note, I got off my mission and was like, well, you know what? I didn't have it so bad. You know, my friends are getting back from Brazil with parasites, something that we're getting rid of, and I'm coming back from having 3 square meals a day, so it's not such a bad deal. So I actually saw porn for the first time on my mission, and it was on a bishop's computer who forgot to clear his internet history.
Oh, how interesting.
Yes. Tangle webs we weave.
Oh, my.
I have to say I'm not really surprised. That's a whole other story.
Sure.
But, you know, and I hope he's done fighting his demons and figured something out. But mm-hmm. I realized I was gay at that point. And when I got home on my mission, about a year and a half to 2 years after I got back, so I was like 24, I was like, I can't keep pretending that I don't know what this is, because I do know. Actually, I was 23.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went into ex-gay therapy and tackled the issue head-on, swimming upstream, as you said. And at first I came out to my bishop, and then he recommended this church family and child services type thing. So they kind of have their own safety net. So I went through that with a one-on-one therapist, and then was recommended to also go through this group therapy called Evergreen.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the Mormon equivalent to Exodus. And incidentally enough, I'm doing a performance in Utah this week for the organization that kind of handles the aftermath of the people that have gone through Evergreen, which is called Affirmations.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's their first
recovery program. It's kind of like a recovery program for recovery.
Yeah. It's their first. It's their first chapter meeting in Utah County for Provo, and they invited me to come out and speak to them. So it's going to be an interesting little full circle of events, I should say. But yeah, it was a struggle. And you know, at first, when I went to the therapy, it was like, wow, finally some people that I know that are in the same boat as me. I don't feel so alone anymore because this. Those of us that have been through a coming out experience in a very conservative area in a religion that teaches that, you know, gays and lesbians frustrate the eternal plan of happiness and godhood in the next life, and, you know, it doesn't go well. So I felt like finally some people are in the same boat as me. I don't feel so alone. But then after a couple of years, it's like, so when does this change? Like, there's more than 12 steps to this. I keep doing all of them all the time, and still nothing's changing. And there's a guy that had been going there for about a decade, and he said, well, I've been coming here for about 10 years, and nothing's changed for me.
Mm.
But they've got him on this medication to help him because they said that he's bipolar, and that's what's causing his gay feelings, his same gender attraction problem, as they call it, because they don't consider something gay until it acts. Yay, that's what we were told.
Oh, goodness. It's hard to imagine that is still going on in here now, today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I meet with people, you know, when I've gone back to Utah, and I still get Facebook messages from people that are going through the exact same therapy still with some of the same exact answers to why they have this problem, you know, whether your dad wasn't there for you, mom was overbearing, you were molested as a kid, you know, all of the same answers they've been spouting since the 1950s, they're still kind of holding on to, because heaven forbid someone be biologically different, you know.
I read
in a white heterosexual Caucasian male.
Of course. And I read in one of your little bios that you were playing Disney songs at an early age, so I'm thinking that maybe that had an influence too, right?
Maybe. My mom said it was probably the He-Man doll action figures, I should say, that I played with way too much, apparently.
Oh, goodness. Goodness. Well, I think it's an important issue to explore, because dealing with that inner process and dialogue is not only deeply difficult, but in the end, it's very empowering and absolutely necessary for one to really be able to stand solidly in one's own truth.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I just feel that's kind of one of my mantras, is that line, above all else, to thy own self be true.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not honest with yourself and with me, if I'm not honest in my music, my lyrics, my backstory, then I can't be honest with myself. I can't be honest with my audience. And in turn, my life isn't really an honest effort. So it's a very, very important thing for me.
Sure. And when did you feel then that your musical ambitions were kind of calling you to a life beyond Salt Lake City and Utah?
I had been doing some touring around while I was doing the Mormon stuff, the Mormon music. And ironically enough, the more I traveled outside of Utah, the more I realized, well, at first I remember actually going to Seattle and seeing a coffee shop for the first time and being appalled that this sinful drink was being offered to high school children without parental consent.
It's amazing, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, that's how much of a bubble I was in.
Sure.
But the more I actually was traveling and doing this Mormon music, the more and more I realized, wait a minute, I think Utah is kind of doing the bubble thing here, and I think everything else, I don't really see anyone else going to hell for drinking this or doing anything else, so maybe, you know, that's kind of stuck in my mind, that things aren't as what they seem. So, once I had done the Olympics and I had toured around Utah regionally doing Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat for about 7 months, and I met with some people and I'd traded like work for in New York, and they said, well, come out and do a fundraiser and a couple of shows and see what you think. New York is a really good place for you. So I flew out here and did some shows, and I ended up probably flying up to New York 3 or 4 times a month.
Wow.
And I finally just decided to take the leap of faith. And going from a culture and a social network of conservative Salt Lake City to coming to New York City was probably one of the craziest things I've ever done in my life. Because I went from, oh my God, say in Utah, opening the door for an elderly woman and being thanked, to opening the door for an elderly woman here in New York. Of course, it was 1 in the morning and I was getting pizza, but she thought I was going to steal her purse.
What a culture shock. It's great.
Yeah, and she said some expletives at me and asked if I was an effing Boy Scout.
Oh, no.
So I called my father. It was like, I thought you said this Eagle Scouts thing was actually going to win points. I told him to screw off, basically. So,
that's a great
story. It was a big culture shock. And to tell you the truth, the whole New York thing where, you know, it chews you up and spits you out and yada, 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 that's really true. Mm-hmm. I mean, you come here to visit and it's a totally different story than living here. And, you know, I was actually told when I first got to New York to go back in the closet, so to speak, and not talk about my backstory and not talk about why I wrote some of the songs and to just make it about the music and not to be pigeonholed as a gay artist. And I did that for a few months, and it wasn't, I couldn't do it. Kind of mm-hmm. going back to that honesty thing.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I moved away from this, you know? And, you know, if my goal is to sell out and to pack Madison Square Garden, and I don't know, just be something that's made, I guess, sure. But I'm not going to be happy, and I'm, you know, they said you can come out later. I'm just, no, you know. I went through so much crap to get to the place where I'm at and be comfortable with myself and my life. Why would I ever, ever, ever want to rewind and go through that again? So I stuck with it, and, you know, New York chewed me up, spat me out, and I had to decide if I was going to go back to Utah or if I was just going to stay, and I stayed, and then that's when Prop 8 happened, and then Stand for Something happened, and big things started to happen.
Good, good, absolutely.
It's been going wonderful, you know?
Mm-hmm. Good for you. And are you familiar with Sheely Wright, the country western singer?
Yes, yes. I met her at the Out Music Awards here when I got the country award.
Okay, I mention that only because her story is very similar. And unlike some artists who kind of chose to do, you know, some of the crossover stuff and go into other genres, she decided to stay true to herself as a country western singer. And so it's been costly, but out of those ashes, you know, are rising new opportunities. So as we kind of wind down here, your first release was Runaway, which was probably reflective of kind of where you were at that point in your life.
Yes.
And now you have a brand new release, which is entitled Nothing This Real. I actually have a copy, thanks to your great PR guy, Dan. He's a fabulous guy, I have to say. And one of the things that interested me was in your liner notes, you said, this is picking up where I left off has been a journey within itself. Life, I realized, is a constant evolution. Pretty insightful. Give us just a real quick backstory behind that whole thing and your new CD release.
Okay. It's kind of a little one and the same. I had, after the release of Stand for Something, knew I had to put a new album out and easily began writing. And I felt like I was only writing about halfway into the new songs and felt like I had all these abandoned half-painted pictures in the back room, basically, these songs I had written post-Runaway. Post running away,
mm-hmm. yeah.
That I had started writing after leaving the church, and I felt like, well, I can't be writing this new stuff if I've got all this. You know, I've got some other songs sitting on this back burner that I absolutely love that are part of my story, and I felt like I needed to go back and connect the dots mm-hmm. and just throw something out there because I kind of, I don't write in a journal, and I think my music is part of my life, so it needs to be connected. So so Nothing Is Real and Great Escape, those first two tracks are actually very autobiographical, and intro into the album as appropriate, because it's about leaving from where you were in familiarity to a place of the unknown, but trusting what you're doing is right, and going from a place that's been repressive to a place that allows you emotionally, spiritually, and physically to be in a place that has no limits. Mm-hmm. So that's what this new album's about, and it's about experiencing all those feelings for me for the first time, and leaving the lyrics very honest and raw and open, but open enough also that the listener can identify with the emotions that are in the song. So it's not so specific that, you know, you kind of lose the listener sometimes, I think, in some of these newfangled songs on the radio.
Right,
so.
Right.
Well, how I want it to mean something, and, you know, so people can find their own meaning in it, too.
Sure, absolutely. How can we find out about more of your story? Are you on Facebook, Twitter,
CD Baby? Everywhere.
You are.
I'm all places at all times.
And
I'm on
Facebook. You know what else? You're on Wikipedia. I think you have arrived when I can get a Wikipedia blurb on you. Do you realize
that? Well, I think that was my mom's doing.
But good for mom. Just struck me as funny.
Thank you. I'm on Facebook as Justin Utley Music, and Twitter at Justin Utley. My website's justinutley.com. My stories is on the website, and music's on iTunes, Amazon.com, all that fun stuff.
Good, good. And we'll be playing more of it throughout the shows as we, you know, go down the road. So, absolutely.
Fantastic.
For artists like yourself, for people who are maybe in a position where you were a few years ago, any words of encouragement or experience that you can give a shout out?
Yes, definitely, and especially to those that have been there, done that, been through it. I believe it's a refiner's fire, and I think that when you've gone through it, you have an unset obligation to put that out there, like the It's Better Project, and, you know, reach out and help someone else that's going through it, because even with the resources we have today, it can still be a very scary, lonely place. And I just encourage anyone listening to think about that really hard, because I would have loved to have somebody reaching back to help me during the time that I went through. And people are still going through that. And, you know, the whole It's Better campaign, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm taking part in it. And I hope that one day we can actually just say it is better, because enough of us are actually doing that we don't have to say it gets better anymore, you know?
Very good. Fantastic statement to go out on. Thank you very much, Justin, for, again, staying up late and being part of the Outbeat program.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor, actually. I love the program.
Good, good. Well, I especially appreciate that, in fact, you do stand for what you believe, and you're a fantastic model for all of us in terms of just what it means to be real, to be authentic, to be invincible, actually, in the power of your own truth. So we wish you great, great success. I'm going to friend you on Facebook, and
yay.
I'm going to... So accept me, okay?
I absolutely will.
All right, and then we'll certainly watch for, you know, the new adventures as we go down the road, okay?
Awesome.
Thanks. Thanks again, and best to you, my friend.
Thank you so much. We'll be in touch.
Okay, very good. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and once again, my thanks to Justin Utley and his great PR guy, Dan. They're two fantastic fellows that are doing wonderful, wonderful work in the name of the LGBT community. Want to invite you to tune in next week to Outbeat Collage when Gary and I are going to be talking with transgender photographer Karen Massing. Also, we'll be talking to Joy Anagostis from Out West Dance. And next month on Outbeat Music, it's a journey to the tropics with the likes of calypso, little reggae, maybe a few steel drums, all LGB style. Once again, my thanks to Mary Moore Campagna. She is, as always, our engineering angel of the airwaves. And to all of you for tuning in, as always, be real, be remarkable, and don't forget to keep a song in your heart. I'm Michaela Kennan. Have a great week.